Jai Om Vishnu Pad Paramahamsa Dhammakacharya Shtota Disha Shri Shriman Bhakti Sadanta Saraswati Maharaja Srila Prabhupada Gita Ananta Koti Vaishnavinda Gita Namacharya Srila Haridasa Thakura Gita Prem Shikaho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vastavi Gaura Bhakta Vinda Gita Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gopa Gopinath Shyama Kunda Radha Kunda Gita Gopinath Gita Vrindavan Dham ki jai, Radhadweep Dham ki jai, Gangamaya ki jai, Jamunamaya ki jai, Tosi Devi ki jai, Bhakti Devi ki jai, Samaveda Bhakti ki jai. All glories to the Assembled Devotees, all glories to the Assembled Devotees, all glories to the Assembled Devotees, all glories to Shri Guru and Shri Gauranga. Auspicious invocation which precedes narrations of the glories of the Lord and his associates convey the personality and the significance of those personalities who consist of the divine entourage of the Lord, which is really our only means of communion and connection and return to him. The pranamas to Srila Prabhupada describe how we offer our respectful obeisances unto him who is very dear to Lord Krishna, having taken shelter at his lotus feet. Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Vacharani Varasesa Sunivani Skitati Siddharani. Offers respects unto our spiritual master Srila Prabhupada, servant of Saraswati Goswami, who are kindly preaching the message of Lord Chaitanya and delivering the Western countries, which are so darkened and permeated with voidism and impersonalism. Pranamastu Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Srila Prabhupada. I offer unto my spiritual master, or our Paramahansa, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Prabhupada, take hold of his lotus feet. And unto all our various Siksha Gurus, who are like desire caves, begging for their mercy, which alone can remove all our sorrows. And Srila Prabhupada, in 1968, was glorifying his spiritual master. He began by continuing his explanation of that verse, which gives insight into the nature of the appearance and the disappearance of liberated souls. That verse where the sage is bestowing his benedictions of four varieties upon the four different boys. Unto the prince, Rajaputra, he blessed him. May you live forever. And Muniputra, son of the sage, may you die now. And the devotee, you can either live or die as you like, meaning that there's really no difference from the absolute perspective. And for the butcher, neither live nor die. Meaning that for the prince, so absorbed in sense gratification, which is based on sex, better live forever because you think you're enjoying it, but when you die, you'll reap the rewards of the bitter fruit of your sensuous exploits. And since sensual life is essentially sex life, receiving an appropriate body means that of a sparrow or a pigeon or a dog or however a cat, which is unfortunate because the opportunity for devotional service is not available except to extraordinary souls who for some divine arrangement take birth in those lower species. And the brahmachari, better you die now because you're performing so much tapasya, being trained for entrance into the kingdom of God. So die, make your worthy reward. Go back to Godhead. The devotee, either live or die as you like. Because what's the devotee doing? He reasons ill, he tells the Vaishnavas, die without living still and sound. The Vaishnavas have to live in their life. They're spreading the holy name around, so it's absolute. The coming and going, their so-called appearance or disappearance, is simply for the sake of spreading the holy name. So as they see appropriate in the service of their gurus and Krishna, they're doing what is according to the will of the Lord. And the butcher, don't live, don't die, because it's so horrible either way. Life means death of so many innocent living entities, and death means reaping the consequences of those hideous activities. So don't live, don't die. That's how Srila Prabhupada began his lecture on the disappearance day of his beloved Guru Maharaj in 1968. If we examine the sequence of events and the sequence of lives of those great Nitya Siddhas preceding and including Srila Prabhupada, we see what we've been discussing recently regarding the appearance and mission of Jesus and what preceded and followed his life as a long enactment of pastimes and personalities which come to this world to fulfill the will of the Lord and lift our lives up into a higher picture. It's not that they just eradicate our sorrows, but they lift our lives into a larger picture in which joy is contained. And they broaden our perception, and what we perceived before as a world of obstacles becomes a realm of opportunity, where everyone is potentially representing our guru and guiding us home. And that which was so oppressive before becomes liberated. And that which was so obstructive is transformed into a rhythm in which the worthy expression is dance and song. So, prior to the journey of Gauravani, Lord Gauravani's message to the West, the mission of Lord Gauranga and Prabhu Nityananda, who are likened to the sun and the moon rising simultaneously on the horizon of Gaudadesh and illuminating the world with the brilliance of that land which is touched on, where all the trees are wish-fulfilling and everything is chintamani, revealing Braj Bhakti into this world and illuminating this darkened world with the most exalted, pure teachings. After which, in just a few short centuries, the world had become so darkened that the British Empire's Mission Impossible Age of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, High Court Magistrate, who was delegated by the British to handle impossible situations that they didn't know how to deal with, like Bishop Nixon, the pseudo Mahavishnu, with his own Brahma and Shiva, who was proclaiming the destruction of the British Empire, and had everybody so intimidated. But Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur just approached him and very humbly was pleading and preaching to him, give up this pretense and surrender. Anyway, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, who had at his disposal so much power and access to, you know, so much scripture, so much ability to gain evidence, and was so expert in his giving judgment in the court that just by looking into the eyes and seeing the heart of those presented before him could understand whether they were guilty or not and give an appropriate sentence. He was never wrong. And what would take a huge team of British lawyers so long to fulfill, he could do just in a glance. But it took him 8 years of diligent investigation and inquiry to find, even in the manuscript form, one copy of Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita in Bengal. That incident alone gives an illustration of how darkened the world had become within just a few centuries of the advent of Lord Gauranga. And is symbolic of how his message and teachings have been lost. And in an encyclopedia of religious thought, the movements compiled at the turn of the century described Gaudiya Vaishnavism as a very decadent cult which performed all kind of abominable sensual activities in the name of worship of Krishna, which means that the compilers of that encyclopedia took the Sahajas as a representative of Lord Chaitanya's mission, which was what was widely accepted as the reality at that time. So such darkness, where the sun and moon of Lord Gauranga and Prabhu Nityananda have been eclipsed by various shadows of the British and Indian influence. So, the pure teachings of Lord Gauranga have become so eclipsed in such a short period of time that the only thread of truth remaining was in the hands of a few reclusive renunciates who weren't actively preaching the message of Lord Gauranga, although they were purely representing it in their own, lives. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur interacted with those Babajis while simultaneously leading the life of high court magistrate who was in charge of the temple, Jagannath Puri, and was raising at the same time 12 or 13 children, and was especially noted for rediscovering the birth site of Lord Chaitanya and his movement, which had been obscured by the cultural and religious chauvinism of the times. And the movement had been so discredited by the perverse activities of the sahajas. So, it was Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur who revived the mission of Lord Gauranga and his teachings and published the writings of the six Goswamis, Lord Gauranga's own apostles, and established the timeless importance and relevance in his own songs and poems, which reveal the deepest, most intimate, ecstatic emotions and realizations of bhakti. So anyway, when Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, because, you know, Srila Prabhupada in his answer to inquiries, was it true that in his earlier life he was associating with impersonalists. He was delving into different religious traditions, which we see he actually incorporated in a pure sense in his own Vaishnava writings and songs. And Srila Prabhupada answered that, just like Arjuna, Krishna told Arjuna, you and I have taken birth many times together, you forgot. So Arjuna was acting as if a little bit bewildered to set the scene, for Krishna is imparting to him the divine instructions contained in the Bhagavad Gita. So similarly, when Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur later in his life actually came upon the teachings of Lord Chaitanya, he saw that it was so far superior and so contained the essence of all previous religious teachers and religious thought and saints and prophets, and he wanted to propagate that message. But the atmosphere was so antagonistic. The world was so darkened by all these adverse elements that this whole sequence of events is so much consistent with the whole rhythm of Lord Chaitanya's advent and what preceded and followed. Prior to Lord Chaitanya's advent, it was Advaita Acharya who led that small band of Vaishnavas in an atmosphere which is so adverse, even though it was Navadvipa Dham, the Lord's eternal abode, an atmosphere so adverse to bhakti. And then he saw that the mission of establishing bhakti in such a darkened world really necessitated divine empowerment and insistence, and he prayed for the Lord to come down. And in a very similar mood and a very similar pattern of events, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur found the mission falling upon his shoulders so superhuman that he prayed for a ray of Vishnu to assist him in his mission. And the answer to his prayers came as his fourth son, who he named Bimala Prasad after the Parashakti of Lord Jagannath, his internal potency, who was noted by the astrologer as personifying the 32 symptoms of a Mahapurusha, which the astrologer said he'd never seen before, in addition to having his umbilical cord wrapped like a Brahmin thread, and golden and effulgent was the child. And the astrologer predicted that he would become world famous as a teacher and preacher of life's ultimate goal. later in that lecture, Srila Prabhupada explained how determined he was that when he was 2 or 3 years old, he took one mango and ate it. He didn't know that Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura had just purchased that mango to offer the deity, and he hadn't been offered. And he very mildly chastised his son. That was meant for the deity. You should not have taken it. And this two-year-old child began to rebuke himself so severely. What evil thoughts have overcome me that I will never again touch one of these fruits? This is the proper atonement for one who has been ruled by greed. Two-year-old child. And Srila Prabhupada said, this is exemplary. This is Acharya who teaches by example that he's so determined to live in a way and teach and preach in a manner pleasing to Krishna. And Srila Prabhupada said, whenever they'd offer him mango, he'd say, no, I cannot take. I'm an offender. And in Indian tradition, it's customary to offer mangoes to sadhus, because it's the king of fruit, the most precious thing, offered in the service of, and he would not accept. Throughout his life, he adhered to that vow. Beginning his education in school, he really had no interest whatsoever in the lessons, but was very attentive to all the narrations given by his father, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura. So much so that by the time he was 7 years of age, he could narrate all of Bhagavad Gita, but more wonderfully, he could explain each verse with such wisdom and insight and realization. And then a little later on in school, like high school time, he inaugurated his August assembly meant for discourse on philosophical matters. And the only intuition for entering this assembly was a vow of celibacy. And then, at that time, or just after that, going to Sanskrit College, becoming very enlightened and a master of the six branches of Indian philosophy, which is the prerequisite to be a real pundit. And his teacher was so amazed at how he mastered, you know, Sanskrit grammar and the verbal roots and everything, just like Lord Garunga. Just manipulating the verbal roots to amazement of everyone. And his professor said, you should continue studying like this. And he said, no, I'm not interested. This is just a secondary study and I'm finished with it. He said, I want to dedicate my life to the single-minded cultivation of bhakti. So he dropped out of college at that time. Without graduate, just like Srila Prabhupada, didn't accept the diploma, just dropped out. And he wrote that if I continue like this, then I'll get harassed to get married, and I'm just so. But just like Lord Garunga, after mastering and showing his superiority in the world of intellect, just discarded it all as useless in and of itself, but supportive to his cause. Because in the Indian world, especially in Bengal, nobody was revered, was respected so much as the pundits. Not royalty or anybody, but pundits were regarded with the highest esteem. So Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, just like Mahaprabhu, just, and he would memorize, not memorize, he would just read once whole libraries and recall anything at any time. And it was secondary to his preaching. But just like Mahaprabhu, he gave it all up. Because when he was a young child, he was initiated by his father, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura, into the worship of the Korma deity they discovered when they were digging the foundation for the temple in Calcutta. Similar to when Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura, and it was confirmed by Jagannath Das Babaji, discovered the Yoga Pitali, excavating the footer, discovered Jagannath Mishra's own Daksha deity. So Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur initiated Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati to the chanting of the holy name and the worship of that Kurma deity. And then later, he was given actual diksha. He was given holy name initiation, but given his actual diksha. Because as such a pundit, all the professional gurus wanted him as their disciple to increase their prestige. But he wasn't interested in any of them. And when Gaurakishore Das Babaji came from Braj, wearing his tiger skin cap, Srila Bhakta Siddhanta Saraswati was so touched by his deep humility. And he understood that this is my guru, and he begged him for diksha. But Srila Gaurakishore Das Babaji is so humble, and this pastime is just parallel to that of Narottam Das Thakur and Lokanath Goswami. Lokanath Goswami is so humble, as was Gaurakishore Das Babaji. This Siddhanta Saraswati is such a pundit, so learned, so educated. And, you know, Gaurakishore Das Babaji was a relatively illiterate person, just a grain merchant in his previous existence. Very simple, very... So he was not the least bit inclined or attracted. But Srila Bhakti Siddhanta was begging him. His name at that time, when Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati took initiation from his father, his name Varshabhanvi Devi Dayuta, the boyfriend of the daughter of Rishabhana, which is significant because Rishabhana, king of Varshana, Rishabh actually means bull. Bhana means son. Very interesting. Anyway, relevance to sun, meaning illumination. And the bull being the emblem of a glorious dynasty in that realm of the sun. So Varshabhanavi Devi Dayita Das was his name. And he was begging Gaurakishore Das Babaji for initiation. Babaji Maharaj was not inclined. He's such a learned, illustrious pundit and so influential in all. He was such a simple... But just like the continued, repeating, determined begging of Narottam Das Thakur, which finally broke the vow of Lokanath Goswami that he'd never accept disciples. Just see the whole series of lives of these acharyas, up to and including that of Srila Prabhupada, is just the same patterns of Gaur Lila being reenacted. The world goes through periods and cycles of light and dark, just like day and night and the coming of the dawn. And after the brilliance of the day reveals all things in their true nature, nighttime always follows in the material world. But light always comes again from darkness. The dawn always follows the setting of the sun. So, anyway, when he was begging, with such sincerity and humility, Babaji Maharaj, who was a little bit avadutish, you know, tried to evade, "I will have to ask Mahaprabhu. I cannot act independently. If he gives permission, then your desire will be fulfilled." So the next day, very earnestly, he asked, "Did you ask Mahaprabhu?" "I forgot." And then with determination, day after day, "Did you ask Mahaprabhu?" "I asked him, but he didn't answer. I did not receive his command." At that point, Siddhanta Saraswati, which is Varshabhanavi Devi Daita's epitaph according to his erudition, mainly in astrology, it was such an astrology. But then his heart was breaking. And he said that you... in Lord Chaitanya, worship the crest jewel of the Bhajis, Krishna, so why should you have mercy on me? But if there's no mercy, weeping and weeping, I
cannot sustain my life. And he was crying. And Gaurakshasana's brother told me he was on the verge of giving up his life, thinking that without Diksha, life is meaningless. And then Gaurakshasana's Babaji's heart was just melted by this response. And he told him to go take a bath in the river and then come back to him in the Saraswati and come back, at which time. Actually, that was the time when he got the name Varshavanavi Devi. Dayita Das. And Siddhanta Saraswati was an epithet in recognition of his erudition, but that was largely in astrology, in astronomy. And he would make these astrological predictions, which are always right, and he would, but before taking them seriously, he would present them to Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura. And just like Srila Prabhupada, if anybody offered him some astrological advice, if he liked it, say, oh yes, this is Krishna's will. If he saw it as irrelevant, he just discarded it. But in this case, we have the most learned astrologer the world has ever known. And Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura liked it and said, yes, this is Krishna's will. But if he didn't see it was supportive to Krishna's will, he just discarded it as useless. The passing away of Gaurakshasana's Babaji was a very illuminating event. Because all the custodians of the various temples wanted to have his eternally blissful form to put into samadhi, because that would be very conducive to their fundraising. So all the temple managers converged on the spot where Babaji Maharaj's eternally blissful form lay on the ground, waiting to be claimed. And then the police came to understand that this was a very volatile situation, because all the managers knew that whoever got the samadhi would have the best advantage in fundraising. So the inspector of police came there, expecting potential major conflict. And then word was carried to Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, who immediately appeared on the scene, barefoot, and at that time Chaturmasi with long hair and beard. And he said that since I'm his only disciple, I will claim his body. And the so-called Babaji's responded that, but you're not a sannyasi, therefore you do not have the eligibility to place his eternally blissful form in samadhi. And he said, although I'm not a sannyasi, I am a brahmachari, and by the grace of Paramahamsa Babaji Maharaj, I have not become addicted to the abominable habits of fornication and interaction with Matajis. So, if any one of you Babaji's can claim that for 1 year you have not had illicit intimate connection with women, you can claim the body. And the police commissioner said, well, how are you going to know if they're truthful? And Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati said, I'll have faith in their words, because if they're not true to their words, they will be destroyed. And then they were all intimidated. So he said, 6 months. Anyone who is 6 months, or 3 months, or 3 days has not had illicit connection with women can take his body. At which, when he got it down to 3 days, all those in Babaji attire turned and walked away, leaving only the chief of police there, totally astonished. And then Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati said that, oh, and then there was another controversy, because they said it was Babaji Maharaj's desire that his body be dragged through the streets of Navadvip to be purified from the dust of that holy realm before being placed in samadhi. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati replied that, although we are fools, inexperienced in such matters, and offenders too, we will not be declined to understand the deep humility saturating those words spoken by Gurudev in order to destroy the pride of worldly-minded persons. Because even Krishna Chandra himself yearns to claim the body of Gurudev and take it upon his lap or on his shoulders or upon his head. And he is referring to, or uses an example, the disappearance of Haridas Thakur, in which Lord Gauranga claimed his body, danced with that holy form on his lap, and personally placed Haridas Thakur in samadhi. So that put an end to the second part of the controversy. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati claimed the spiritually blissful form of his Guru Maharaj, placed it in samadhi. So, it was Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's desire, and he sent Lord Chaitanya's life and precepts to inaugurate his desire of the message of Lord Gauranga going to the Western worlds. It was Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati who assisted him in his printing, in his editing and printing of the books, and in Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati was touring all over in Cuttack. He inspired that professor, Sanyal, who began a 3-volume set depicting the life and teachings of Lord Gauranga in such a way as would definitely impress the intellectuals and philosophers. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati gave that order. In fact, Srila Prabhupada commented that when he was literally dragged by his friend, because he was the leader of his little band of friends, and nobody would, but they were so impressed with Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, who was teaching in Calcutta, which was the epicenter of intellectual and cultural and philosophical thought and debate. And when he was preaching there, and Srila Prabhupada's friends told him that this is a real exalted sadhu, and Srila Prabhupada wasn't inclined, because he'd seen so many of them as a child. His father would invite like a dozen every day to honor the culture of having sadhus come to his home, and he would serve them with such humility and love, and only ask for one thing: bless my son, he may become a servant of Srimati Radharani and preacher of the Bhagavad. So Srila Prabhupada was not impressed, because he said they were largely a disappointing bunch, hypocrites, really. He didn't want to go up with his friend there and drag them. And when they went in the presence of the sadhu and paid obeisances, before even getting up, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati told him, "You're intelligent boys, go preach in the Western world." And Srila Prabhupada was amazed. He hadn't even gotten up. They hadn't been introduced. They hadn't gotten up from paying obeisances. And this Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati has given him his life's mission.